this of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. So Deborah, we are anxiously awaiting what you have to say. Thank you. You're on mute, Deborah.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Deborah, recovered alcoholic. Are you there? You're there. I can tell. Okay. Greg's nodding. Thanks for coming, getting on with me tonight. Last week, oh my goodness, I wasn't feeling that great, and I was really had the steroid thing going. So anyway, today is much better. Steroids are over. And I'm glad to be here with you tonight. It's such an honor. Oh my God, I can't believe we're on step 8 already. And, you know, I want to start off by saying how I first came to my first AA meeting. I came here because I thought I was having a problem with drinking. And I didn't want to be an alcoholic or anything like that, but, you know, the facts were the facts. And so I came to my first AA meeting, and, you know, at first for me, alcohol was the answer for everything, for me. Growing up, I had this terrible, I felt like I walked around like I was punched in the gut most of the time. I was anxious and nervous, and, you know, when I had my first drunk at age 14, all that went away. And I had fun, and I felt like I was with my people, you know? And so, you know, obviously, or, you know, not obviously, but what, of course, happened to me, like most alcoholics, is the consequences while drinking started to outweigh the ability of me to lower my standards or explain away my actions. So when I came into AA, I've mentioned this before, with regard to, I mean, I was 28, I guess, and I believed my problem was drinking. I had a drinking problem. And therefore, when it came to the steps, I worked them as they applied to my drinking problem. So, you know, this first step, step one, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, our lives were unmanageable. For me, that was an easy one to see. You know, I had no control over the amount of alcohol I consumed once I started, and all kinds of crazy stuff happened when I was drinking. Easy for me to see that one. You know, and I thought, okay, and that's pretty much what the people said in AA. In the beginning, don't drink and go to meetings. Get a sponsor. Read the big book. You know, all the things that you get, you're told. And I remember with step two, I thought that I would try to find a relationship with God in church, and that was unsuccessful. And I actually got a sponsor, a woman who was, you know, quite older than me, who had a very strong faith in God. And I thought she would help me find God. And of course, it's just naive. I was looking for, I just thought I would get it. I don't know. I would have a relationship by hanging out with her. I don't know what I thought. I can definitely, and I definitely know I need power because I don't have any. I don't have any power to overcome drinking. And in step two, I see the need for power because I was insane. I am insane. My baseline thinking is insane. I was not in reality long before it became so common and popular. But I didn't know it, of course. But I didn't know it. When I was a kid, I had a family that was out of control, and there was just a lot of, it was alcoholism, and so as a kid, I looked outside of myself to try to see if I could figure out what is normal, and that's all I wanted to be, was normal, and to have some sort of feeling of fitting in. And so, anyway, this whole thing with the step two and everything like that I didn't have ever in the beginning a close association with a higher power, but I could see the need for power with drinking and to stop the drinking. And of course, AA was that power for me for many years. And then when it came to step three, again, as it relates to alcohol, turning my will and my life over to the care of that power, essentially what happened for me with step three in the beginning was I turned the drinking over. That's what I did. I turned the drinking over. I did not consciously make this decision, but I can see it now in hindsight. I have the advantage of now looking back and seeing that's what I did. I turned the drinking over. To me, the not drinking was the most important thing. Don't drink. Even if your ass falls off, don't drink. And, and the thing of it is, too, prior to coming to AA and during AA, I had a ton of higher powers. I was, like I said, I was a slave to the outside world, to the worldly clamors of wanting to be accepted, looking good, being successful, having all the things that I thought, whatever that entailed, that's what it was to me. And of course, it talks in our book a lot, especially in step three, about self-sufficiency being not such a good thing, because for the obvious reason, but when I was a kid growing up and the way I grew up, I was a very self-sufficient little girl, and it served me well in that family. Thank goodness I was. And I've been able to take care of myself. I've been self-supporting my whole life. And, there have been good things that have come out of it. However, it actually, like it says in the book with the character defects, they're all, natural qualities we have that are taken to the, you know, nth degree and then work against us. And so, so I guess the thing of it is, after a few years in AA, I got lonely. You know, I wasn't really, you know, the God thing wasn't a thing for me. And I ended up having, and asking a woman to be my sponsor. I know Leslie might know her, but she was Mrs. AA in Pittsburgh, okay? And they were very popular. And they were like the ringleaders of fun. And she became my sponsor. Carol was her name. And we did a lot of things together. We went to a lot of AA anniversaries. We went to Cook Forest. Ton of fun. But, you know, interestingly enough, you know, Carol was the kind of person who, if we were at a meeting together and somebody walked up to the podium with their big book, she would say, "Oh, I hate that." And so, you know, and you know, basically, I was sober on the Don't Drink and Go to Meetings fellowship program. That's what they were doing, and that's what I was doing. And I thought that was the way to go because it seemed like everybody else was doing it, which I don't know if they were or not. But, you know, that's what I did. I was still, you know, looking good, and I was sober and working, and everything was going great. And that was... That's how it went. I mean, I have the benefit now of hindsight of seeing, you know, it's just to me amazing when I read the big book now. The big book is our instruction manual for how to get close to God, to fix the spiritual malady we all have that causes us to be alcoholic. And so how I was able to, in my mind, I would read things in the book about strengthening our relationship with God. And I would, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, they say half measures will avail us nothing. Well, I didn't think it was a half measure. I just thought it didn't apply to me. I'm trying to find a statement here. That God is, I'm sorry, I can't find it, what I was looking for, but the point is, it says here, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And it goes on to say, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to faith. I mean, it's throughout our book. It says here, the main object of our big book is to enable us to find a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. It's a book that's spiritual as well as moral. So that is the essence of what the book is about and the program is about. And for the first 17 years of my sobriety, I was really not drinking and going to meetings, and I wasn't working on any kind of spiritual development or anything like that. I was in the material world, caught up in worldly clamors. And so I've mentioned this many times there. I you know, I got to the point where I started thinking, man, you know, I was not feeling good. I don't know about you, but when I came into AA, I wasn't feeling good. And I thought I would feel better, you know, the longer I was sober. But that wasn't my experience. I noticed around 15, 16 years, something, you know, I was like, man, I think I should be feeling better than this. And, you know, nothing was working. You know, the job wasn't working, relationships, money, none of that worked to fill the hole in my soul. None of that worked, no matter how hard I chased it. And I told you that I had a little, at 17 years sober, I had a come to Jesus thing on a business trip. And I was introduced to a woman who took me through the steps as they are outlined in the big book. And it was a huge life changer for me. And I began once again seeking a contact with a higher power, God of my understanding, spirit of the universe. I've called them all things. And when I redid that, and when I got acquainted with her, I redid my fourth step. And this time, when I did my fourth step, I did see some things about myself that I wasn't even aware of. And the crazy part about it is, I mean, I didn't even know that I was, well, I mean, in terms of resentments, being selfish, being frightened, all of those things, I was sober, but I still had all those characteristics, character flaws, were all still active in me. And I was unaware of it because that's how I always have been. So, you know, at step four, you know, looking at some of the resentments, some of the troubles, some of the damaged relationships, and, you know, looking to see where I was at fault. And that is where, for me, I began to come into contact a little bit with God, because it is all these obstacles, the resentments, the hurt feelings, the whatever you want to call fear, all the everything, those are the things that actually I learned blocked me off from God. And it was for me impossible to establish a connection until some of that was removed. And that started happening when I did a step five with Yolanda down in San Antonio. And, you know, it's the beginning of humility when you're sitting in front of a person you admire and respect in the program and talk about the things you did and realize that all the rationalizations, all the rational lies I told myself were just lies. And that if I was going to live and be sober, I wanted to be free and continue to work my relationship with God. And that is really, you know, coming into step six and seven, where you're ready to get rid of those things. You know, you say, I mean, it is the time, say, you know, I'm done. I'm realizing that my behavior is not working for me, and it's actually working against me. And I became ready at that time, and then with step seven, asked God to please remove some of the glaring character defects. I mean, it's ongoing, you know, especially with the fears, especially with the angers. I mean, anger is a normal, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what, this life is stressful, isn't it? Any of you guys that are working out there or anything, oh my God, life is so dang stressful, and it's hard. It was hard for me not to get mad. Ah, resentments, and stressed out. You know, it's just that's just how the way life is now. With step seven, asking God, you know, I just ask Him, please take away my fear, please take away my anger. Direct my attention to what you would have me be. And that really seems to work for me. You know, it's a funny thing about that, though, with step seven, asking God to remove the character defects. The one part I don't think I got was that you can ask God to remove the defect, but you got to stop doing it. He's not going to come down and pluck it out. I mean, you've got to cooperate, and that is the hard part, and the discipline that comes with surrendering to yourself, coming into reality, looking at myself the way I am, not the way I think I want to be. And not the way I want, that I hope that other people are thinking about me. I mean, all kinds of crazy things have gone through my brain. And when it comes right down to it, it usually, to me, if I'm feeling anxious or resentful or any of those other things, I'm being blocked off from God by one of my defects. And to be honest with you, it's no longer comfortable for me to feel that way. That was my normal. That was my normal my whole life. I was a nervous, anxious person. And and you know what? When it comes upon me now, like even with the steroids last week, oh my gosh, I no longer like feeling that way. It's not comfortable. And I want to be present in this moment, in reality, and not telling myself rational lies. So then it brings us to step eight, where we are tonight. And step eight is where we make a list of the people we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. And to me, step eight is all about forgiveness. All the years of, you know, in the drinking in the beginning, I mean, it was obvious the people I had to make amends to. They were mostly in my family. There were some close friends and everything, but you know, again, too, living all those years even sober with my character defects running rampant. You know, there's been ongoing work here. Ongoing work. You know why? Because one of my defects of character is that, you know, I'm quick to judge people. And if I think you're judging me, I'm going to judge you right back. There's been a lot of things, and in my family, there have been a lot of hurtful things that have happened, and, you know, I realize all the more now how much this disease, I mean, it's a lot, I mean, the drinking is the ante in the poker game, no question, but then there's the thinking, and the living part of light that is the challenge. I'm finally understanding and learning that, letting things go, forgiving people, if I need to make an amend or not, the most important thing is to forgive the person and go on, because you know what, it's just not worth it. It simply is not worth it. We want to admit to the things we have done, the harm we've done to others, meanwhile forgiving the wrongs done us, real or fancied. Oh, I love that. That is out of the 12 and 12. So, meanwhile, we're getting angry with people over imaginary shit, you know? So, I was anyway. Maybe you didn't, but I know that was me. Here I am, step 8 and 9. Ah, yes. 76. Oh. Okay, here we go. So we have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made the list when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask till it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. At the moment, we're trying to put our own lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's our main purpose. So it goes on to say in this in the big book on page 77, the question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he's done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the good in our cheek. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. Our manners, calm, frank, and open, will be gratified with the result. And, you know, that, it does take a lot of courage and a desire to, you know, stop living in the past. For me, stop living in the past, forgive and love people. I mean, this is the biggest commandment from Jesus is to love one another. And as he had loved us. So this is the beginning where we're getting, I think too, you know, there's not easy with everybody. I'm sure a lot of you heard about this, where you make the three lists of people, the people you want to make amends to immediately, the list of people you want to make an amends to maybe later, and then of course the list of people you never want to make amends to. And you get started on the list one first. That's what I did. And the way it worked for me is that over time, you know, I became willing to make amends to all. Now, you know, it says in the book, this is a lifetime process. And it has to be, because I, over my lifetime, have continued to screw up and make mistakes. And, you know, so the amends process has been ongoing. It's not something that ended the first or second time around. So, I guess that's the only thing I really want to say about step eight is, you know, sometimes too, adding people on the list that aren't on step five, step four list are, you know, children or other people that, you know, they didn't really do anything wrong to us. We were just not nice to them. So, you know, be honest, and it's this, remember that everything is that you're doing is for yourself and your own sobriety, and the results are really gratifying. So that's it for me. Thank you, everybody.
Alright.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so who has a question for Deborah? If you have a question, please just go ahead and unmute yourself, and then you can speak up. We will get us started.
Hi, I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you so very much. I was just wondering, as you made the list in your eight step, were there people who you did not know how to contact or had lost track of? And what do you do in that situation when it's, you know, you're willing to make the amends, but you don't know where the people are?
I've written letters that never were sent. And the main thing I do is pray for the people. And, you know, that's the best I can really do is pray for the person.
Thank you. That's a great idea.
Well, that's a question.
I have a question, Deborah. Hi, I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. When you were talking about when you were doing your fifth step, and that's where your list for your eighth step comes from, when you went and did that with your sponsor, or you do it with your sponsees, do you make any... take suggestions on like an order of how to do them or when to do them or when they come up, or do you do the easiest ones first or the hardest ones first, or is there any order or that you take it in?
Well, you know what, I guess the thing of it is, you know, I don't micromanage any of that, and the way it works out for most people, like I said, you know, it's the primary amends usually are within the family, and those usually happen naturally and early on. And I mean, but I have certainly talked to people about someone they think is on their list. I mean, not all the people that are on a list really belong on the list. And vice versa. So I appreciate, especially when it comes to some old relationship things and the like, there's, you know, it's every case you have to just look at individually. And, you know, mostly I tell people to follow their heart, but, you know, it does say later on that we don't have to crawl or grovel before anyone. And I would agree with that. That's it.
Did you have any amends that you wanted to make, that maybe that your sponsor told you that either needed to do or not needed to do?
My first list with my sponsor, the older lady, her name was Nell Taylor, and I had a pretty long list, and she said, you don't owe all these people an amend. My list got cut dramatically, and because the thing of it is, part of the self-centeredness is feeling like you're responsible for the whole world. And I sure did. And every little thing I felt sorry for. So, yes, I've had to. It's good to run it by a person before you just go off and make an amend. And make sure your motives are right and all of those sort of things.
Perfect. Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah.
Who else has a question?
It's pretty straightforward. I mean, you could almost really do step 8 and 9 together. I was talking to Mary Lou. She said that's how she did it. But we didn't discuss that, and so I'm happy to do it this way. And it's important to think about.
Yeah, now we're looking forward next week to step 9.
Right.
If that's it, we have a nice way to close. First of all, are there